What if I told you that you could build a completely private, highly secure alternative to Gmail in like less time than it takes to make dinner?
It sounds kind of impossible, right?
It really does. But before we map out exactly how to do that, we have to talk about the foundation of your digital privacy, which is exactly where today's sponsor, SafeServer, comes in.
Yeah, this is a crucial starting point.
Right, because if you are running a business, an association, or really any group handling secure communications, you are likely paying a massive premium for expensive proprietary tools. We're talking about vendors like Microsoft ThinkExchange or Google Workspace.
And those costs just pile up year after year.
Exactly. But you can actually replace those heavy corporate ecosystems with open source solutions at a fraction of the cost. And I mean, this isn't just about saving money. When you are dealing with strict legal, regulatory, and compliance requirements,
Which pretty much every organization is these days.
right. Mandatory email retention, stringent data protection laws, securing financial records, pristine audit trails. In those scenarios, data sovereignty is everything. You cannot afford to have your critical organizational data sitting on a server halfway across the world.
Subject to like completely foreign jurisdictions and opaque corporate policies.
Exactly. SafeServer helps organizations find and implement the exact right open source solution for their needs. They guide you from the initial consulting phase all the way through to secure daily operation. And they run everything entirely on German servers to guarantee absolute data sovereignty. You can take back control of your infrastructure today by visiting www.safeserver.de.
It really is a fundamental shift in mindset, you know. The infrastructure choices we make dictate the level of control we ultimately have over our own information.
Because when you rely on someone else's server, you are just playing by their rules.
Right, 100%.
And that concept of control taking it back specifically is the entire focus of today's deep dive. We are looking directly at you, the listener, and exploring a very specific roadmap for reclaiming your digital communications. Our sources today are the official website and the GitHub repository of a pretty legendary open source project called Mail in a Box.
It's an incredibly ambitious project, honestly, because it challenges a very deeply ingrained habit we all have, which is outsourcing our digital lives just for the sake of convenience.
Yeah, convenience really is the killer there. The stated mission in these sources is to show how even a total beginner can completely bypass the tech giants and spin up a fully functional private email provider in just a few steps.
Okay, let's unpack this. Why would anyone even want to build their own email server today?
Right.
I mean, we live in a world where you can sign up for a free, beautifully designed email account in about 30 seconds. Why go through the effort of building your own from scratch? Well, to really understand the why, we kind of have to look backward at the original architecture of email itself. The core protocol that makes email work across the globe is called SMTP, or Simple Mail Transfer Protocol.
Okay.
And when it was designed, it was inherently decentralized. The original vision was a true peer-to-peer system. Any computer on the internet was supposed to be able to talk directly to any other computer and just, hand off a message.
So kind of like the physical postal service.
Exactly like that.
Yeah.
Anyone, theoretically, could set up a mailbox at the end of their driveway, and the mail carrier would drop off the letters.
But I mean, looking at my own inbox, that is absolutely not how the landscape functions today. It feels like all the world's mail is flowing through just like three or four massive corporate sorting facilities.
It really is.
If you aren't using Google, Microsoft, or Apple, you are in the extreme minority.
And that centralization happened slowly. And it happened mostly out of necessity, actually. As the internet grew, it became a much noisier, much more hostile place. Suddenly, anyone with a computer could send millions of pharmaceutical ads or phishing scams for free.
Right, the golden age of spam.
Exactly. Spam and spoofing became massive infrastructure crippling problems. So to combat the noise, the tech industry developed dozens of modern security and routing protocols just to verify who was actually sending what.
And I'm guessing that implementing and maintaining all those defensive protocols is where the average person just gets left behind.
That is exactly the problem. It became incredibly difficult for a small-time operator or a hobbyist to keep up with the shifting security standards. If you missed an update, your server was either compromised or completely blacklisted.
Ouch.
Yeah, so people naturally migrated to the giant tech companies because, well, those companies had entire buildings full of engineers to manage that complexity. We basically traded our architectural independence for a really good spam filter.
Wow, yeah. But then the pendulum swung the other way, right?
Got it.
Because looking at the history in the GitHub repository, this mill-in-a-box project was started back in August 2013 by a developer named Joshua Toberer.
Right, 2013.
And the context of 2013 is super crucial here. That was the absolute height of the mass electronic surveillance revelations.
The Snowden leaks.
Exactly.
Suddenly, the general public woke up to a very uncomfortable reality. Having all global communication centralized in the hands of a few corporations made mass dragnet surveillance remarkably easy.
Because they didn't have to tap everyone's house.
Exactly. If an agency wanted to read the world's mail, they didn't have to tap millions of individual servers. They just had to tap three or four giant corporate data centers.
Which spurred this massive movement to basically re-decentralize the web. According to the sources, Toberer was directly inspired by a blog post circulating at the time titled NSA Proof Your Email in 2 Hours.
That title is just, it perfectly captures the panic and the ambition of that specific moment in tech history. People were actively, almost desperately, looking for ways to pull their data out of the central silos.
Right.
So Toberer took his own personal mail server configuration, combined it with the steps from that famous blog post, and wrote a series of automated scripts to make his setup reproducible for other people.
So the goal is basically making your own Gmail, but one you control from top to bottom. Every piece of data, every attachment sitting on a machine that you actually own or rent.
Exactly.
But I have to push back here for a second. Isn't running an email server famously a total nightmare for beginners? I've heard veteran programmers say they would literally rather do anything else than manage an email server.
Oh, yeah.
So how does this project actually lower the barrier to entry?
Your skepticism is entirely justified there. Historically, self-hosting email is a notoriously fragile, really frustrating process. A traditional setup requires deep knowledge of Linux system administration, advanced networking, cryptography.
Sounds exhausting.
It is. If you configure one port incorrectly, you become an open relay for spammers. But Mail-in-a-Box approaches the problem from a completely different angle. It isn't a tutorial you read through. It's designed to be a one-click email appliance.
An appliance, like a microwave. I don't need to know how the magnetron is wired. I just put my food in and push the button.
That is the exact philosophy they're going for.
Mm-hmm.
But to do that, the documentation is very strict about your starting point. It requires you to start with a completely fresh, untouched cloud computer.
Okay.
Specifically, it demands a blank installation of Ubuntu 22.04 LTS 64-bit. It cannot be a modified operating system. It can't have other software running on it. It has to be an absolute blank slate.
Why so strict about the blank slate, though? Like, what is actually going in the box once you trigger that installation?
Because the automated script goes in and builds an entire highly interconnected ecosystem of software. If there's anything else on the machine, it could create a conflict. When you run the setup, the first thing it installs is PostFix. Yeah, PostFix handles the SMTP protocol. It's the software that actually sends and receives the mail across the internet.
Okay, let me try to visualize this. So if my server is a post office, PostFix is basically the loading dock at the back of the building. It handles the trucks coming in from other cities and the trucks heading out.
That is a great way to look at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, a loading dock isn't enough on its own.
Mm-hmm.
You also need a way for the end user to actually read the mail. So the script also installs Dovecot, which handles the IMP protocol.
Oh, okay. So keeping with the analogy, Dovecot would be the wall of PO boxes in the front lobby.
Exactly.
It organizes the mail, so when I open the mail app on my iPhone, I can look inside my specific box, see my unread messages, and, you know, delete the junk.
Spot on. But mail in a box goes beyond just sending and receiving text. Yeah. It really aims to replace the entire corporate suite. So it also installs Nextcloud, which handles your contacts and calendars, allowing them to sync to your devices.
Oh, that's handy.
And it installs Roundcube, which provides a sleek webmail interface.
Yeah.
So you can just log in through a browser just like you would with Gmail.
Okay, billing the post office makes sense. But wait, hold on. You mentioned earlier that the real nightmare of modern email is the security protocols. I'm looking at the documentation here, and it is just an intimidating alphabet soup. We've got SBF, DTIM, DMRC.
Right, big three.
I always thought messing with these records was the fastest way to accidentally knock your entire domain offline. How does a beginner navigate that without breaking everything?
Well, that is where the automation elevates from just being helpful to being essential. Mail in a box doesn't just configure your mail software. It actually takes over and acts as your domain's name server.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it controls your DNS entirely. By doing that, it can automatically calculate and publish that entire alphabet soup of security protocols for you.
Let's actually break those down because I want to understand how they protect the server. Let's start with SPF.
Sure. So SPF stands for Sender Policy Framework. Think of it as a public guest list. It is a record published to the internet that tells the world exactly which server IP addresses are legally allowed to send email on behalf of your domain name.
Okay.
If a server that isn't on the list tries to send mail claiming to be you, the receiving server checks the SPF record, sees the mismatch, and just rejects the message.
Got it. SPF is the guest list. What about DKIM?
DKIM, or Domain Keys Identified Mail, tackles a slightly different problem, which is tampering. It adds a cryptographic signature to the hidden headers of every single email you send.
Oh, so DKIM is basically a wax seal on your digital envelope.
That's a great analogy.
If a spammer intercepts the email in transit and tries to change the sender address or the body text, the cryptographic wax seal breaks.
Yep.
And when the receiving server sees a broken seal, it throws the email in the trash.
Exactly. And then the third pillar is DMRC. DMRC tells other servers what your strict policy is if an email fails those first two checks. You know, the SPF guest list or the DKIM wax seal.
So it's the instruction manual for failures.
Right. Do you want the failing email quarantined in the spam folder, or do you want it outright rejected? Setting these three protocols up manually involves creating these really complex strings of text in your DNS provider's dashboard. One typo, and your mail stops flowing.
Yikes.
Yeah. But Mail in a Box handles the cryptography, generates the keys, and publishes the records silently in the background.
And looking at the sources, it doesn't even stop there. It sets up DNS SEC and Dane TLSA, which I understand act like armored trucks for your mail, providing an incredibly high level of protection against active tampering attacks between mail servers.
Absolutely.
Plus, it auto-provisions lets encrypt TLS certificates so your webmail connections are encrypted. It configures a firewall, and it even sets up intrusion protection to automatically block IP addresses that repeatedly try to guess your password.
What's fascinating here is how the system maintains itself after that initial installation is finished. It doesn't just build the post office and walk away. It provides comprehensive daily health monitoring.
Like it checks up on itself.
Every single day, a script runs in the background to check that all the necessary services are running, that the internet ports are open, that those TLS certificates haven't expired, and that your DNS records are still perfectly correct. It literally audits itself.
It's just wild to think about. Instead of spending a week reading dense Linux manuals, you run a single automated setup command, and it's basically like hiring an entire IT department to work for you around the clock.
It really is a massive democratization of complex technology.
Yeah.
But, and this is a crucial pivot to achieve that level of foolproof automation, the project has to make some very strict compromises.
Right. So the automated script does the work of a sysadmin, but here's the problem with hiring a robot sysadmin, right? You can't argue with it.
No, you cannot.
If I have a human IT department, I could say, hey, tweak this setting or install this custom plugin I found. But Mail in a Box says absolutely not. Its rigidness is a feature, not a bug.
Yes. The developers are incredibly upfront about their anti-goals. And this is highly unusual in the open source software community, which, you know, usually prides itself on infinite customization and tinkering.
Yeah. Open source is usually all about choices.
But the Mail in a Box documentation explicitly states that they do not aim to make something customizable by power users.
They actually say that if you want to tweak configuration files after installation, you should go use a different project entirely, like iRedMail or Motoboa. There are essentially zero user configurable setup options under the hood.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you have to understand a vital concept in system administration called idempotent configuration.
Idempotent, okay.
An idempotent operation is one that can be applied multiple times without changing the result beyond the initial application.
I think I need an analogy for that one.
Think of it like a smart thermostat in your house. If you set the thermostat to 72 degrees and the room is already 72 degrees, the thermostat does nothing. It just verifies the state.
Okay, that makes sense.
But if someone comes along and opens a window, dropping the temperature to 65, the thermostat kicks in and forces the room back to 72.
Ah, I see. So applied to the server, if you run the setup script once, it configures everything perfectly. If you run it a second time, it checks all the files, realizes they are already configured correctly, and changes absolutely nothing.
Precisely. And whenever you need to upgrade the system, or if something inexplicably breaks, you don't hunt for the bug. You just run the exact same setup command again.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It wipes away any custom changes you might have tried to make, fixes any broken files, and just forces the server back into its known, perfectly working state.
Yeah.
If they allowed users to tinker with the underlying files, that upgrade process would shatter.
Because it wouldn't know what to expect anymore.
Exactly. Automated, auditable, and idempotent configuration is really the only way to keep a mail server stable for a beginner.
It's funny, because looking at the sources, they also explicitly state another anti-goal. Despite being inspired by that NSA-proof your email blog post, they say they do not aim to make a totally unhackable NSA-proof server.
Right.
They prioritize making a good, standard, reliable mail server easy to deploy. But why should you, the listener, care about these limitations? Why is it actually a benefit that you are locked out of your own server's engine room?
Because it protects your most valuable asset, which is your time. When you decide to self-host a critical service like email, the massive danger is that you inadvertently take on a second unpaid job as a system administrator.
Which nobody wants.
Exactly. You end up spending your Saturday nights debugging routing loops or fixing corrupted database tables just so you can receive an email from your bank.
Yeah, you don't want a side job. You just want an email server that just works. By locking the system down and refusing customization, Mail-in-a-Box ensures that the burden of maintenance remains incredibly low. You get the privacy and the control of owning your data without the headache of keeping the gears turning.
However, having a perfectly running machine on your end does not mean your problems are entirely solved.
Okay.
And this is where we have to discuss the external factors.
The real-world catch. Because email is a two-way street. Your server has to talk to the rest of the world, and, well, the rest of the world has to be willing to listen.
Yeah, it's the tricky part.
Imagine spending your whole weekend setting this up. You buy the domain, you run the script, the daily health check says everything is perfect, you send your first test email to your boss's Gmail account, and it silently vanishes into their spam folder.
Yeah.
That is the infuriating reality of self-hosting today.
It is a harsh reality,
yeah.
And the documentation is very careful to point it out. You can follow every instruction perfectly, have a perfectly secure, valid Mail-in-a-Box running with all your SPF and DKIM records glowing green, and still be rejected by the major providers.
But why, though? If I'm following all the rules, why does Google or Yahoo care?
Because you cannot control the rest of the internet, and the big mail services operate on complex, opaque systems of trust and reputation. When a brand new IP address suddenly starts sending email, the giant algorithms are inherently suspicious.
They just don't trust you yet.
Right. They don't know who you are. They don't know if you are a legitimate small business or a spammer spinning up a new operation.
So managing your domain's reputation becomes your sole responsibility. If you use a massive provider like Google Workspace, you are pooling your reputation with millions of other legitimate users. When you strike out on your own, you are starting from zero.
You basically have to undergo a process called IP warming, where you slowly send a few emails a day to known contacts who will actually reply to you. You're gradually proving to the algorithms that you are a human being and not a bot network.
Sounds tedious.
It is. The Mail-in-a-Box community forums are full of people trading tips on how to build reputation and get delisted from overly aggressive spam blacklists.
And here's where it gets really interesting, because Mail-in-a-Box makes it so incredibly easy to set up a server. Bad actors can use it too. Spammers don't have to be tech geniuses anymore. They can just run the script and spin up their own automated spam boxes.
They absolutely can, and they do. And this puts the maintainers of the open source project in a very tricky philosophical and legal position. When someone receives a flood of spam from a Mail-in-a-Box server, they look at the headers, see the software name, and often try to contact the developers to report it, demanding they shut the spammer down.
Like, they think Mail-in-a-Box is a centralized service provider, like MailChimp or something.
Exactly.
But the developers have what they call the recipe defense. The website states it perfectly, actually. Mail-in-a-Box isn't a mail service. It is a cooking recipe for how to create a mail service.
It's a brilliant, legally vital analogy. The creators of a recipe have absolutely no way of knowing who is following their instructions in their own private kitchens around the world. And they certainly can't stop bad actors from, as they put it in the documentation, baking their cake to hide a poison.
They have zero technical or legal means to log into someone else's server and disable it. They're just providing the instructions. It's like Microsoft providing the software for Exchange Server. People use Exchange to send spam too, but nobody expects Microsoft to remotely hack into a private company's server and pull the plug.
This raises an important question about the true hidden cost of digital independence. When you remove the tech giants from the equation, you gain total privacy. You gain sovereignty over your data,
Right.
But you inherit all the difficult, messy tasks they were handling for you behind the scenes. You inherit the grueling task of managing your own domain's reputation. You inherit the responsibility of ensuring your server isn't compromised.
Yeah, freedom isn't free. It comes with server maintenance and spam filter algorithms. Yeah. So what does this all mean? It synthesizes what we've been talking about today perfectly. Mail in a box is a wildly powerful tool for reclaiming privacy and promoting that re-decentralization of the web. By creating an appliance, they've made the decentralized web accessible again. Yes, the hurdles of deliverability are real, but they are sort of the necessary growing pains of taking back ownership of your digital life.
It's a trade-off, for sure.
Right. And before we finish up today, let's circle back to where we started. Reclaiming that ownership, especially for an organization or a business, doesn't have to be a massive anxiety-inducing headache. That's why SafeServer is such a valuable resource.
Yeah, having that guidance is huge.
We talked about replacing those expensive proprietary tools from Microsoft or Google, but think about what you actually gain when you do. You get massive cost savings compared to paying endless monthly licenses to the proprietary giants.
And you get that peace of mind.
Exactly. More importantly, you get ironclad compliance for data sovereignty. Your data stays in Germany, fully compliant with strict European privacy regulations, and you don't have to figure it all out alone, hoping your emails don't hit a spam folder.
Right, because they handle the tough parts.
SafeServer can be commissioned for consulting to figure out if an open source solution like Mail-in-a-Box or perhaps a comparable enterprise alternative is the right fit for your specific operational needs. They help you build that secure private infrastructure from the ground up, ensuring it works perfectly from day one. Head over to www.safeserver.de to see how they can help your organization take back control.
It's definitely worth checking out if you're serious about this stuff.
Definitely. And I'll leave you with this final thought. If email, which is literally the web's oldest, most fundamentally decentralized protocol, was so easily surrendered to a centralized oligopoly just for the sake of convenience, what other daily digital tools have we blindly given up control over simply because we didn't have a box to make self-hosting them easy?